Hello everyone, it's time for another edition of Adventures in Careerland. I am your host, Adriano Magnifico. I'm the career lead at the Luria Real Arts and Technology Center. And that's a very cool place where high school students, post-secondary students, and those who are looking for an extra leg up on how to manage their life, find the skills that they thought they never had, think about where they fit in work and life, and to realize their great potential, this is the place, the Luria Real Arts and Tech Center, where you can find programming like applied business management, automotive technology, baking and pastry arts, building trades, culinary arts, electrical trades, aesthetics, hairstyling, information systems, media design, plumbing. You can find a space here where you can exercise your skill and find out if you have this skill. And the beauty of it is, for a high school student, it's part of the high school curriculum for you. It's free. So when a high school student comes here from one of the seven schools in Luria Real or from one of the schools outside of Luria Real, it's a great opportunity to start your thinking, your training, your education about what your career can look like down the road. We never say this is your end point. We say this is a starting point for you where you're assessing and thinking about who you are, what's important to you, what do you value, what are your skills, what skills you want to acquire, and who values your skills, your mindset, and your sense of culture outside of regular school walls. And that's not something the regular high school system generally does for you. So we're very proud of this place. I'm very happy to be the career lead in this place. And we are in the podcast studio of one of those amazing programs called the Broadcast Media Program. And we have two co-hosts with us today. They are both from the Podcast Media Program. One is Zach Pichet. Zachary, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm a little tired, but
stop saying that. I'm so tired of someone from this generation telling me I'm tired in the morning. So stop saying it. I want you to jump out of bed saying, I'm ready to rock, baby.
I just don't roll that way. I don't have the energy in the morning.
I don't roll that way. Okay. I guess we'll have to tolerate you, but I know the energy is slowly seeping up, right? You start in the morning, you feel like nothing, a blob, an amorphous blob, and then you turn into Zach, the power man, right?
Yeah, I just need a little bit of caffeine.
You know, we never had caffeine when I was a kid. When I was a kid, we never did. Although my mom slipped me caffeine. It was something called, as an Italian, a little kid. I was a five-year-old having something called latte macchiato, which was really milk. Latte macchiato meant dirty milk. And she dirtied the milk with a little coffee. So as a little kid, I used to dip my bread in it, my buttered bread in it. I loved it. I thought it was so good. So I've been drinking coffee since before you were even a glint of possibility in anybody's eye, even a dinosaur's eye. All right. And our other, so I'm glad that you're up and running, Zach, and you're ready to go for the podcast. And our other co-host is Iyama. We call her Oma.
Oma.
How are you, Oma? And of course, you're good? Mm-hmm. Are you tired?
Yeah, I'm tired.
Oh, jeez, you guys. You got to get past this.
Why can't we be tired in the morning?
Because the morning is the energy time. Be tired at the end of the day after a hard day of thinking, of project work, of meeting people, of connecting with this educational process here. Mm-hmm. That's when you feel tired, after you put in a good day's work. If you're tired when you begin, what will the rest of the day look like?
My energy time is like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. That's what happens.
In the morning? Yeah. Like at night?
Yeah.
So what do you get done then at 2 a.m.?
Oh, no.
That's your energy time. So you are just sitting there.
On my phone.
Wasting away on your phone. On my phone. And of course, Oma's told us before that her phone is what, your best friend?
Yeah. My best friend forever. BFFs. We're BFFs.
And of course, that makes me very sad. I have a question for both of you. I wonder, now, you're a little tired, get out of school, at the end of all this, you've gotten some education, you have a high school diploma. What most worries you about leaving high school?
Failure.
Failure?
Yeah.
Why would you be worried about failure?
I don't know. I just, maybe high school, like what I have after high school doesn't work out, and then like I just become broke and like poor and like boring for the rest of my life.
If I see you under the bridge, I'll be sure to make it. I'll have a sandwich for you. I don't want you to worry about that. I will make sure you are taken care of. Mm. But you're really worried about that, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel that in this program here? Or do you feel like school is nurturing you? Like home is nurturing you, obviously. But is school also nurturing you and not building up this sense of confidence yet?
Maybe because like what I take in school isn't really what I want to do, so I don't see it that way. But being here, it just like opens another career path for me. So maybe that's why it's just like better. And yeah, I just, that's what I think.
Is your confidence growing, you think?
Yeah, it is growing here.
I can see that in you when you, like when you said that. And it's quite legitimate to say I'm worried about failure or not doing well or choosing the wrong path. But you're building the skill sets that you think connect to you, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yes.
Watch your confidence go. Soar. It's going to be pretty cool. How about you, Zach? What are you worried about?
I'm really worried about like friends and like the connections I have in high school. I'm already seeing some of them like wither away a little bit.
Your friends are withering away.
No, not like that.
I love
like,
it. No, I love it. You know, I love the metaphor.
I've always been told like, you know, you're not gonna keep the same friends after high school. You're only gonna have a couple of them, and I'm starting to see that.
Who told
like,
you that?
No, my parents.
Your parents have no friends. Your friendless parents.
No, but like you only keep a couple of friends after high school, and I'm worried about having the same like brotherhood and connection I have with football, because I'm not gonna be able to do things like that forever.
You know what? Those are both totally legit things you're saying, and they're valid, and they're 100% correct. And I think the way to kind of battle some of those feelings is to get good at things, to enjoy. You're building a whole new group of friends here, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to happen when you leave, because I can see you both have a very gregarious quality to you, and you're very outgoing, and you're committed to the work you're doing. When you do that, you just fall into a group, a natural group. You call it a brotherhood. So that's kind of cool. Those are legit, though. I don't want you to think. I'm not making light of it. Those are legit feelings. They're okay to have. Just keep forging ahead, getting good at things. And watch some of that part wither away. Some of the kind of, I don't know, nervousness, the anxiety. When you get good at things, your confidence soars. And you start hanging out with people who are good at things. And then you watch what happens. Anyway, thanks for that. We have a special guest today. Holy smokes. And I just learned that he's kind of a... He applied to be a Rhodes Scholar, so we are quite unworthy at this table. Rhodes Scholar means this is a pretty heady person, pretty smart guy. He is Noah Wilson. He is from Futurepreneur. He is the Senior Business Development Manager that also includes Indigenous Youth Entrepreneurship. And he's our special guest today. Noah, how are you?
Very well. Really excited for today, and I'm already fired up for the conversation ahead, so appreciate being a guest on this amazing podcast here.
Hey, now, what did you worry about in high school?
Oh, yeah, what did I worry about in high school? A lot of the same things. Actually, exactly the same things that both of you are worried about, and, you know, I can say that, you know, I know, Zach, yourself, you're playing football, so I can tell you that the friends I made through football are still my best friends today. You're going to have fantasy football leagues. You know, sounds like you're propped up to be a good football player even after high school and you know, join programs like the Winnipeg Rifles, which, you know, a lot of our boys, they go out to BC, and I say, you know, if we kept all the talent in Winnipeg, we'd be winning every single year for the Natties. But and, you know, the Bisons are a great program. But yeah, the best friends that I've had to this day were really forged in football, and they still are really strong. Yeah, you're not going to have all of the friends that you did in high school, but you're going to be able to see them around, and it's always good feels and good vibes. And in terms of failure, I was just saying earlier, like, number one, as being a young person, your ability to fail is exponentially less risky than later in your life. So if this is the time to fail in your life. You can start over again, and you don't have kids, you don't have a wife, you don't have a mortgage. Like, this is the time to fail. And the one perspective I always take is I would rather fail at something than look back and say, what if? Like, the worst thing you can do, I think, when you think back on your life, and I always try to, you know, think back or think ahead and say, okay, what did I do in my life? And how do I want to live that right now? I think to myself, you know, I would rather try something and fail at it than look back and say I never tried and I never knew it would happen. And you know, I work with entrepreneurs, and failure is a part of the process of being an entrepreneur and becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's really where growth happens, and that's where the best learnings you're ever going to have is through failures, and you're only going to be better for it. And you know, I always say it's like a minor setback for a major comeback. So it's always those kind of perspectives that I try to.
Wow. Hey, that was a great little slogan. So failure is kind of a superpower in a weird way. Failure, when you learn from the failure and move on. You always got to pick yourself up, though, right? And how do you define even a failure? Just a learning experience?
I think it's within yourself. Like, most of the times when you think you failed, you've had multiple other people around you that you've inspired by even trying. So, you know, really it's a more internal feeling. But I think failure is when an outcome doesn't meet your expectations. I think for me that's what failure is. And instead of looking at, okay, didn't meet my expectations, it's saying, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? Because, you know, failure is just temporary. It's just an opportunity to learn. And like, there's even sayings in entrepreneurship, when you're starting a business, you got to fail fast, because the cost of iterating a business when it's already created is and moved over and like you've already invested money into it and you have software and all the things there, and then ultimately the business model doesn't work out, that's exponentially more expensive than if you fail fast, if you test ideas out, if you you know, are willing to pivot your idea and not be too married to that original idea. That's when you can find some of these, what we call in the entrepreneurship space, unicorns. But that really isn't what entrepreneurship is to me. Like, what I like to think of is, you know, define your definition of success and work back from that. Not everyone wants to be millionaires and billionaires and things like that. And in fact, there's a lot of you know, downsides to all of that type of lifestyle. Like, I work with entrepreneurs that their definition of success is opening a physiotherapy business and earning an honest living, paying for a house, you know, having the ability to support their family. And that's really success for a lot of people. And that's absolutely something to be, you know, aspired, you know, to do in your life. So, that's kind of what.
So where did you get the entrepreneurial bug in high school? What were you like in high school? Walking the hallways of your Vincent Massey grad from 2014, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. And not so you mentioned you played some football down there too.
Yeah.
And that's where you got that spark. So tell me about what life is like of you walking in the hallways and what's going through your head in high school.
Yeah. High school. I was obsessed with football in high school. I was obsessed with football. I loved the brotherhood. You know, it was the first time that I could be a leader and be recognized for that. I played hockey, and you know, if I continued on with that, I would have been a fourth line, probably brawler or something like that. And football was the first kind of sport where you could be.
Well, you're defining my position in hockey.
Yeah,
I played left behind at away games.
There you go. Like, yeah, I would if I was on the bus, it would be because there was going to be a barn brawl or something like that. But but football was this sport. It's the ultimate team sport. It's the ultimate team sport. You can be tall, you can be small, you can be bigger, you can be, you know. You can find a spot and find your niche on the team and contribute to the team. And really, football is about that, building that inherent trust that a really good team is a team where you do your job and you can trust that the dude beside you is going to do their job. And it's teams fall apart is when one player thinks that they need to do the most. And like, for example, I played on D-line. It's like you have your gap responsibility. If you can't trust that your other D-line have that other gap responsibility and you try to fill that gap, well, then that's exactly when that running back picks your hole and hits it for a seam for a tug. So, but I love football. I grew up all over. My dad was in the RCMP, so I moved a lot when I was younger. And it was interesting because, you know, having a First Nations dad who was in the RCMP has its own dichotomies and lessons in that. And my dad always taught me to be proud of who I was, but I always kind of had this chip on my shoulder being, you know, a First Nations kid and being on the cop side of town and, like, you know, dealing with, you know, experiencing maybe not racism directed at me, but racism directed at my people and having to really kind of, I kind of had this chip on my shoulder where I wanted to prove the stereotypes wrong, whether it was through sports or and school in the same time. I also, I should mention, I have a twin sister who is always kept me on my toes. She's brilliant. She just graduated med school. She's a doctor now, and she's doing family medicine out in Prince George right now. So having a twin sister who's, you know, really smart and being competitive and not wanting your dad to get on your back around grades and things like that, honestly, doing well at school was kind of that. It was almost like, you know, that young teenage rebellious kind of like, I'll show you and get off my back so I can play football and have fun. And that's really was my approach around, not saying that's like the best approach, but that's really what I did in terms of doing well in school and whatnot. So I went to Vincent Massey. It was amazing. My first year there, we went and played a team out of California, a 5A California football team, which was out of control. Like it was crazy. Like we had when we showed up, the field was so hot, and because they have turf, it's like 10 degree hotter than outside. So we were all like, you know, heat stroke by the first half, and there was guys that were going to USC and D1 football, and it was just like, it was a gong show. But that game was like, okay, nothing's going to be as bad as that game. And then worked my way up in JV. I became a captain and really kind of found myself and found my purpose, I guess, in terms of where I kind of gained my confidence. And then I moved into varsity, and I started right off the bat once I was in varsity on D-line and O-line, and moved into my senior year. And then what's that program? It's called CFC, or like Canadian Football Chat or something like that, where they rank all the
high school teams. Yeah, it's just a ranking of like high school teams in Canada, I think.
Yeah, my goal was to be on like that top 10 list at the end of the year.
Yeah, and players.
Yeah, I was able to make it my senior year, so I was pretty fired up about that. And
so you were ranked one of the top 10 players in Canada?
Yeah, I actually played against Brady Olivier in high school, so he was at Oak Park, and we had a battle. Guess what the score was between Vincent Massey and Oak Park that game?
It 50 was, to 40.
No, it was 3-2.
I was going to say.
3-2.
We coached some games. I helped out with the Kodiaks in the old days when John Potter was the coach.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Potter division. I don't know if you were one of the grandfathers of football in Manitoba. And I remember a game. I think we played Kelvin in a semifinal. Horrible weather. It was 4-3.
Yeah.
In a playoff game. And it was a field goal that got River East into it. I think they won the championship. I don't remember, but they won a couple of championships. But that's when you talk about football and you mention how you love building the trust, how important is that move forward as a skill, kind of something that, or just a culture of you building trust with people? How important has that been to you as a human being moving forward from that lesson you seem to have taken from football about, I want to be in a field. I want to build trust. I want to be beside that guy and do my part because I know he's going to do his part. Talk about trust for a second.
Yeah, trust is like the underpinning of every single relationship you'll ever have in your life. So it's really about, you know, honoring your word and honoring that when you make a commitment to someone and you make a commitment to a team, that you follow through on that and you show up and you go to practice, you practice hard, you go to the weight room, you lift. And it's like, you know, really where you build that trust is through hardships, going through hardships with the team, going through those long 2-a-days. I don't know if y'all are doing the 2-a-days in high school in the spring season, but like once you get to like junior football and the Bisons, you're doing 2-a-days, and it's like those days where you're banged up, your ankle's busted, and you're like, you're still showing up for the boys and the team. And that's really kind of what kind of like shows them that, hey, like you can be trusted when push comes to shove. You're going to show up, you're going to be there, you're going to battle with the boys. And I miss it to this day. I miss being on that gridiron and just that feeling of like being on the kickoff team and just about to, you know, just absolutely just fly down the field, and everything else in the world doesn't matter. I miss that feeling, and like definitely enjoy it while you can.
How important, though, is it first to build the trust within yourself? To trust yourself first. And that's what, like, Oma was talking a bit about that at the beginning. I feel the failure. Sometimes you have to learn how to trust yourself. Like, you're trusting your teammates, and you get those lessons about, this guy's got my back, I've got his back, or their back, or whomever. How do you feel about in your own personal journey about trusting yourself and making the right calls and building your confidence. Because, Oma, that's what it's about for me. It really is. In the end, you have to figure out how to trust yourself and that the failure will be okay. Mm-hmm. And that I'm going to move on. I'm going to do something next that's going to be kind of cool. What do you think?
Yeah, trusting yourself is really from that day in, day out, you know, bring your lunch pail, like we used to say in football, and go to work. It's like it's when you talk to successful people, it's really the day in, day out stuff that you commit to. And it's really just from actually just failing, honestly, like speaking back to that, it's from failing. It's from not meeting the expectations you set out, and realizing that you're going to be okay at the end of it. And the only thing you can control in life is your attitude towards things. And that's really what sets successful people from, you know, people who lose their way, is that, you know, life just happens to people and then they accept it. Whereas like life happens, you know, emergencies will happen, unexpected events will happen, but the only thing you can control in those moments is your attitude towards that. And that's really like, you know, that's what it was. It's kind of like, it's that gritty kind of football attitude. It's like, oh, they just scored a touchdown. Maybe I'll use an example just quickly to wrap it up. Like, it was a semifinals in JV. We were facing Oak Park. Massey had never beat Oak Park at that time yet. And really close game, and it was at the Eagles field there. And it was 1 minute left to go, and Oak Park just scored, and they were up by two. And Oak Park was already celebrating, and I remember screaming at the guys. I was like, there's still time left. Let's go. So anyways, we had our backup quarterback in. And our kicker just tore his ACL, and it was crazy. All hope was lost, so to speak. But we just got down on the line, and we did our jobs. And it was just kind of like one of those moments, just do your job, do your job. We drove down the field like 40 yards. There was 3 seconds left on the clock, and our backup kicker was running out. And then our kicker who tore his ACL, Tanner Williams, he's one of my best friends to this day, he gets off the bench with a torn ACL, runs out onto the field. I remember being in my stance and just praying and praying and praying. And he kicks like a 30 to 40 yard field goal to win the game in the last seconds with 3 seconds left.
With
a torn ACL. And the whole crowd rushed on the field. We're like, oh. So it was like kind of one of those things. It's like when it almost feels hopeless, as long as you just focus on the next step ahead of you and the next play and the next, you know, play call and your job and your assignment, like things can work out. And sometimes things won't work out, like it really, and more times it won't. But it's
what,
like,
a moment is, eh? Yeah. Like you speak about that with such passion. Oh, what awesome. A moment that is in your life to watch that guy. Of course, he's not walking properly now,
yeah.
But it's, but what a moment that is in your life. Like, is it important to find those moments? Like, that's a big one, right? Yeah. That's an enormous moment that yeah. is so memorable. It's so public. You're a part of it. How important it is to find those smaller ones though.
Yeah.
That drive you. And do you have a sense of what are some of the smaller ones in your life that have driven you? The big one and the public one we all see. It's an incredible story. Mm-hmm. I'm tingling when you tell me that. But I think it's important to feel the tingle on the small ones, because those are the ones that are going to drive you down the road for consistency.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Totally. Are there some small ones? Are there people you met, some of those great moments in your life? Like, that's a cataclysmic moment, the big one. The guy kicking. That's like, for me, I'll tell you guys in horror, you don't even remember this, Bobby Bond, an old Toronto Maple Leaf defenseman, was in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He scored the winning goal in a Stanley Cup with a broken ankle.
There you go.
That's part of the folklore of this story and the Bobby Bond story. It's all I ever remember about this guy that he scored. So that's public. It's huge. Mm-hmm. But the Bobby Bond internal pieces, I don't know. So what were some of the other smaller versions of that inside of you, or moments that propel you forward and make you think, this is important, this is shaping me?
I think of... I think when you go through life, you're so focused on the next thing. It's always the next thing. I accomplished this, I accomplished that, or I'm done school, now it's the next thing. And the things that really kept me, like really humbled me, was one of those, like, you know, some moments where like someone comes up to me and says, like, hey, you know, you've really inspired. It's like the little things like that, like the when your friend calls you and they're going through something and you know that they're calling you for some kind of support and advice. You know, that happened to me recently with one of my really good friends. And it's one of those moments where you're like, wow, like someone's coming to me in their time of need for support and guidance, and or just to listen to them. I mean, that's a big thing when I'm ADHD and stuff. So for me to listen is something that I've had to learn over the years. But just to sit there and listen, and just those little moments where, you know, a client says to you, wow, this meeting was like really helped me like reframe things, or oh my gosh, I've been thinking on this for a long time. And you think about like those little moments where to you it's just like, oh, I'm moving to a client meeting to a client meeting to a client meeting every day. And then it's like one of those client meetings are like, wow, this like really helped me figure X, Y, and Z out. It's like those moments where you're like, oh wow, like for me it's like I'm having 5-6 client meetings a day, but like each one of those client meetings could be so meaningful to that person across from me, and I need to remember that, you know. So
yeah, like the big moments, especially in football, like prepare you for like the little moments of everyday life, right? And they and for you it really built those skills, right? So I'm curious, what are the biggest ways mentally that you've improved since high school, since your football days?
Mentally, well, to be honest with you, I was like a pretty like angry kid. I was angry, like, and that's why I love football.
I can relate too. Yeah, it's a good outlet, right?
It is amazing outlet. And that's like where it was like socially acceptable for me to be an absolute maniac, and it was like a place where I could just like, just
especially, you know, on the D line.
Oh, it's, yeah,
because
yeah, literally, it's like, hey, we've all agreed to enter a gridiron and a combat ring, and I was like, okay, everyone signed up for this. You know, everyone can get some, so to speak. But yeah, it was honestly my control of my anger and finding outlets for that, and you know how to use your perceived shortcomings as your strength. Like my anger was always seen as like, hey, that's something that I need to control, and you know, that's definitely not a way to kind of like operate outside of the gridiron, so to speak. But it was like I always have this burning, you know, my dad being a police officer, you know, this idea of justice has always been something in my mind, and I see injustices in the world, and talk about all the injustices that we're seeing to this day right now, what's going on in the States and whatnot. But that anger, I've channeled it into fuel. But it's also like, you know, behind anger, there's, you know, I saw this, you know, I don't know, it was like a TikTok or whatever, Insta reel. And it's like behind anger is, you know, typically with men, it's like, behind anger is sadness. So like really dealing with, it's okay as a man to be sad. It's okay to be, have emotions. It's okay. I'm an emotional guy myself. And I think it was realizing that, oh, one of the best advice I ever got actually around mental, by the way, back to your question, was, you know, our minds, evolutionary, like from an evolutionary standpoint, our minds are hardwired to think negative thoughts or intrusive negative thoughts. The reason for that is that from a survival instinct, the more you are complacent, the more a saber-toothed tiger is going to come behind you and nip you at the neck. And one thing I learned is that is our brain is evolutionarily designed to think negatively. So if you try to resist that negative thoughts, you're actually, someone said to me, suffering is pain plus resistance. Pain is unavoidable in life, right? But as soon as you resist that pain, that now becomes suffering. So knowing that your brain is designed to think negative thoughts, what you have to do is you have to detach yourself from those negative thoughts, and you say, oh, that's the story of my brain. that's the I'm not worthy enough story. Thanks, Brain, for reminding me and warning me about that. But I'll take it for what it is. Or I'm going to become a failure. Negative thought that comes to your mind. You just have to you have to flow with it. It's that flow state. You know, when you get punched in the face, you're not supposed to be rigid. You're supposed to flow. You're supposed to roll with the punch, right? And that's the same thing with mental thoughts. You have to be able to see them for what they are and realize that, oh, my brain is like designed for me to think negative thoughts. So I'm just going to acknowledge that. I'm going to feel it. I'm going to really sit in this feeling. I'm not going to resist this pain. I'm not going to resist this sadness. I'm going to feel it. I'm going to really walk through it. And it's going to suck for a little bit. And it might be easier to push it down initially, but there's going to be a moment where you just blow up, right? So it's better just to like roll with the punches, really feel that pain, go through that breakup, you know, cry in the shower, do whatever you got to do to get through it. Yeah.
But that's a vulnerability piece, right?
Yeah, vulnerability. Like as men, it's
you have to embrace the vulnerability. Like, are you especially familiar with? Yeah, well, that's the toughest thing for people who play those tough games and use them, a game like that, and use it as an outlet. Like as a fourth line, even a hockey player, for me, all I wanted to do was hit people.
Yeah.
No. Honestly, because I couldn't score. Exactly. And you have to find your space somewhere, right? I wonder though, have you read anything by Brené Brown?
No.
Very interesting social psychologist who talks about you need to embrace her podcasts are really interesting. You need to embrace your vulnerability before you come to trust yourself properly.
There you go.
Very good stuff.
Full circle right there.
And she's got a couple of books that I have that have been, Dare to Lead is one of them. But it's
leading. I've heard of that one, yeah.
Lead with vulnerability and embrace that part instead of hiding it and showing that. I don't want to show them that I'm weak or that I might cry sometime or that I might not understand or get this right. It's okay to show that you have your failings and you can still be a great leader doing that. It's a very interesting book. Mm. Worth reading for you guys and worth even checking out a podcast if you think, oh, I want to look into this a bit more. She embraces failure and says, that's the best part about you. Mm. And that's what turns you into the person you need to be.
I really like what you said, though. It's like you're talking about being okay with not being okay is like the best way to like grow mentally and, yeah, like avoid heartbreak. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. That's it.
You're a business guy. You wanted to be a lawyer, though.
Yeah.
So what turns you from a lawyer into the business entrepreneurship person? And what was the realization with somebody? You talked about those little things. That's why it's about little things. I talk about them as taps on the shoulder. Mm-hmm. Someone taps you on the shoulder, reminds you of something, or sees something in you you don't see, mm-hmm. or makes you understand something, or offers an insight. And the tap comes from anywhere. It can be innocuous. Mm-hmm. Could be someone you've never known, or someone who sees something or watches you in action and says, I've never seen that. And it turns you into those spaces. And I just wonder what... Did anyone help you think, or did you just realize this lawyer gig isn't for me? Or were there other people tapping you on the shoulder?
Yeah, a mixture of all of the above. But I would say, so in university, first and foremost, anyone thinking about going to university or anything of the sort, you're not going to figure out in your first year. So don't stress about it. Just like I didn't realize what I wanted to do till I was in my third year. I had like a rough idea of what I wanted to do, and what I wanted to do was serve, you know, First Nations and Indigenous communities. I knew, like, my sense of kind of like the injustices that faced our people for, you know, since the formation of this country. I had this, again, like going back to that anger. I had this anger. I was like, oh, there's so much injustice that's happened to my people and my family and my caring it. I think I did U1 or something of the sort like that. But anyways, I was in university, and then in my third year, I finally found the degree I wanted to do. And it was like this obscure degree that I had to like scroll down, and I found it, and it was just there. And I was like, that's exactly what I want to do. So I took a Bachelor's of Arts in Indigenous Governance, and I minored in Business. And the idea was that I really wanted to have a multidisciplinary kind of background as I went into law school, and my goal was to become a lawyer and fight for Indigenous communities through law. And through my studies, I started to study these Supreme Court rulings and the repatriation of our Constitution in 1982, and the enshrinement of our Aboriginal rights and title rights in our Constitution. And it became apparent to me, and someone said to me, like, we are winning overwhelmingly In terms of legal battles in our judicial branch of lawmaking in this country. And I was like, okay, so we're winning overwhelmingly in the Supreme Court rulings like Delamuck and Sparrow, R versus Farrow, and all of these like landmark Supreme Court rulings. And I was like, why isn't it translating to society? What is the issue with that translation to society? And part of my degree is I took political science. And I realized through taking political science, it was a super fun course, by the way, because there's all these debates and there's people I disagreed with and there's people I agreed with. And it was like, and the people I agreed with, I was like, oh, that's a bad argument. Don't say that. And then I was just like, with the people I agree with, I disagreed. I was like, okay, that's an interesting point there. I could see that. So it was an interesting environment. But what I learned through that political science course was that there's two main functions to make laws in this country. There's the judicial branch, so through precedents and common law in Quebec. So basically, there is a case presented to the court. Based on how the judge rules on that, that now becomes precedence, and that now becomes, you know, a basis for which law can be built on over time, and it just continuously builds over time. But there's also this executive branch of making law in this country. So, you know, our elected officials, our MLAs in the province, and our MPs at the House of Commons. And I started to think, I said, okay, so our judicial branch, we're winning overwhelmingly in our legal cases, and our rights are being upheld constitutionally and, you know, in the courts. Why isn't that translating to societal change? And then I started to look at the executive function of lawmaking, and that's where you get to design your own laws and implement into society right away. So I started to kind of dive down that, and I was like, okay, what really pushes politicians to do things? And what funds their campaigns and things like that. And the reality is, you know, money does, right? Money is a big factor for politicians, and it's a big influencing factor. Right or wrong, it is what it is. And I had an elder come up to me, and I was learning the language, Anishinaabe Moen. And I was talking with an elder, and they kind of reframed it. They said, you know, money is a language, and our people have been taught that language. So I took an internship at RBC, and while at RBC, I was thinking to myself, I'm going to learn the language of money. And I kind of thought of myself, and I was kind of like, you know, I was like, you know, I was fired up in university. I was like, all these injustices, I was ready to go. And so while I was at RBC, I kind of thought of myself as someone from the Rebel Alliance in the Death Star of the Empire. I was like, I'm going to find the vent that blows this whole thing up, kind of thing. I got to understand the Empire in order to like take it down, kind of thing. I was like straight on, like, we need to assert indigenous sovereignty, and we need to know the rules that are being that are keeping our people in states of dependency and Indian Act economics and all the things. So I realized that, you know, in order for First Nations communities and Indigenous communities to become really the power players that we are and should be recognized as, is we need to have the economic basis to be able to be influential in the executive function of our country. And it has to be outside of the pure political power plays that are being done in our communities right now. And it needs to be that we are an undeniable economic powerhouse in this country, which we are and we will be becoming, that can't be ignored. So that was kind of like, you know, and then plus I went back after I graduated, I went back to my community and worked in my community. And I was running a business called Chief Peguis Investment Corporation, still run it to this day. And the work I was getting our lawyers to do, I was like, I am so glad I'm not on the other side of that. And I get to tell it. And I realized that lawyers' bosses are usually the business guys. And I was like, okay, well, I'd rather be telling the lawyer what to do than being the one in the grunt.
That's a lot of reflection, though. Yeah. No, like that's pretty. And how important it is for people to reflect is what you've demonstrated here, and to think it through and to gather the experience and to see what gravitates towards you and what doesn't, what seems to...
Well, I should preference all of that by saying that was not done in a vacuum, and that reflection wasn't some kind of like, that wasn't some kind of like, you know, stargazing moment where it all came to me. The only reason that I was able to come to those determinations was because of mentors. And like, yes, that's what you need to gather as a young person, is you need to gather mentors, but you need to gather your tribe of mentors, I like to say. You need to have, you are the summation of the five people you surround yourself with. So I like went into university. I was really hungry. Even at when I was working at RBC, I told them, I said, I am not going to be working at the branch my whole time if I'm going to be moving my career through RBC. I talked to my boss there. I said, I want a job shadow at commercial banking. I want a job shadow at and Dominion Securities. I want to see where and I want to shake some hands with some people. And then opportunities just started getting thrown my way by older folks who saw this young, hungry kid that was, you know, willing to learn, willing to be humble, but also not accepting like my lot in life at the branch, so to speak.
I love it.
Yeah. So that was kind of it. Like, find your mentors, and my mentors helped me kind of like guide me in the direction where like, yeah, like if you want to do this, is a law school, that's what you really want to do? Like, and more or less, it was like the language of legalese is what I wanted to learn, and language is really core to what's important to me. So I think of things through kind of a lens of language. What language am I learning right now? So
you got into the money for not for yourself, like the business and the whole money thing, not to earn money for yourself, but to really like help other people, right? So would you say like helping people, that's really important to you, like over like money and earning?
100%. Like money can get you freedom, and it can give you the ability to do things, but really what makes like humans are purpose-driven beings that find fulfillment through the helping of others. And you know, if you're willing to, you know, step over and roll over people just for the acquisition of money, you're not going to be happy at the end of your life. Like, what I think at the end of the day, when you're on your deathbed, and are you going to be stoked to have $1 billion in the bank and no one around your deathbed and no one coming up to your funeral, only for just some kind of political, like, you know, surface level, like, oh, I knew this guy, blah, blah, blah. Or is it like people that are going to really care about you and uplifting others? Like, that's really where you find fulfillment in life. And, you know, I work at Futurepreneur. We're a national nonprofit. And, you know, I could have moved to other careers that could have earned, you know, much more money at my age right now. But that's really where I find fulfillment, is helping entrepreneurs at that ground level, at that starting stage, and knowing that you're a small part in their story of entrepreneurship. That's really what gets me up every day and fires me up. And like, in fact, I have a harder time shutting my laptop down at the end of the night than I do opening it up. So that's where you really find happiness, is in helping others. And the pursuit of money is like, it's a shallow pursuit. It only goes so far. And there's even a study that after like a certain amount of money, you make like it's an exponentially diminishing return in terms of perceived happiness after a certain point. So yeah, that's kind of it. Like, help others, like live your purpose through helping others. And whatever you do in life, like, if you're helping others, you're going to find happiness, really, for real.
Can you share a success story of an Indigenous entrepreneur you've helped, like you've supported through the program?
Oh, yeah, I have many. But one local one that I'm really proud of working with him, and he's just an amazing guy. His name is Sean Raylan Bubar, and he is the founder of Red Rebel Armor. And Red Rebel Armor, he actually has a whole warehouse near the airport there now. But his story is amazing. He grew up in North End Winnipeg, was a part of gang life, and really had a tough upbringing, and found his family on the street. And when you talk to youth in those spaces, it's like, you know, they have to find connection, they have to find family, and they need to find a brotherhood. And sometimes that brotherhood isn't found in you know, positive outlets like football or you know, extracurricular activities. Sometimes it's found, you know, with with gangs and things like this. So anyways, he was in the gang life, so to speak. He went to he was incarcerated for a period of time, and then he left. He met an elder while he was incarcerated, and that elder really helped reframe his outlook on life. And he began healing and started thinking about, what am I going to do once I get out of incarceration? And he launched his business. And the reality is, and what you got to realize is about the justice system, is that, you know, if you can't get a job when you're getting out of the justice system, and if you don't have the resources to start your own business, like, what other alternatives do you have to survive? That's what we need to realize about people coming out of the justice system. So he's like, well, you know, limited opportunities to earn a living, honest living, through the employment side of things. So I'm going to start my own business. So he's created this streetwear company called Red Rebel Armor. And the reality is that the Red Rebel Armor is a social enterprise. So the commercial aspect of the business is selling streetwear, and really cool streetwear, by the way. I have a bunch of his stuff. But the revenues that he earns from selling his streetwear supports his employment service side of his business. So everyone in his warehouse that he hires is folks that just left the justice system and need a place to earn an honest living and need a positive outlet. So everyone making his clothes is, you know, someone who's maybe been previously incarcerated or leaving the gang life and want to earn an honest living, want to change their life around. And he's had multiple guys go through his Red Rebel Armor and work with Red Rebel Armor and complete their parole, which is like a huge accomplishment. So, you know, having a business isn't always just about like material and monetary pursuits. It's about, how is he helping people, even through the sale of clothing, which you don't always kind of make that connection around the social enterprise aspect of it. But the revenues he earns through selling clothing helps support the employment of First Nations men and women who just left the legal system and need to earn an honest living and get through their paroles and have a positive environment with someone who's been there and done that and can speak to that and is not kind of that corny motivational speaker that's never lived that life. So he's kind of one of those guys that I'm like, we need more Sean Raylan Boobars out there.
That's a great story. Hey, yeah. Quickly, and I hate to say quickly on this, but you've been the chair at the Chamber's Truth and Reconciliation Committee. Mm-hmm. Talk about that, why that's important, and are we learning the lessons? Are we getting better? That commission was enormous.
Mm.
And I think it's many of the recommendations have been moved forward, but many haven't.
Mm.
How do you feel? How's that moving forward? What does that mean to you to be a part of that? And for chairing that for the Chamber, I think your term's coming to an end.
Yeah, it's passing the torch off. I've been the co-chair for the last 3 years. So, passing it off to one of my colleagues and friends at RBC Indigenous Markets. She's going to do amazing. But about 3 years ago, again, through having a group of mentors and having a group of people who I looked up to and surrounded myself with, I got asked to be the next co-chair for the Truth and Reconciliation Advisory Council for the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce. And I remember I was young. I think I was like, what was I, like maybe 26? And I was going to be in a room with all of the business leaders in Winnipeg and helping lead forward really call to action number 92. And for those who aren't familiar, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission wrapped up in 2014, my first year of university. I remember taking a sociology class and going to one of the closing ceremonies and having to write a paper on it. And I remember just being like so inspired to take these calls to action and actually make them meaningful in my own way, in my own life. And what you can do is you can go look through the calls to action. So Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 92 calls to action. Actually, University of Manitoba has the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation on its premises, and we're really lucky to have that there. So with the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce, of course, in my undergrad, I was very heavily involved in the Truth and Reconciliation calls to action. We actually implemented a call to action around integrating Indigenous language degrees and diplomas at the university, and we called it Reconciliaction. So I kind of carried that on into my career. Moved into the co-chair role for the Truth and Reconciliation Advisory Council for the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce. And the essence of it is, how do we support the business community to implement call to action number 92, which is the implementation of economic reconciliation across Canada. And reconciliation is really about, first, it's truth and reconciliation. Reconciliation cannot happen without first acknowledging the truth. So we have to be all, we have to be able to first support, you know, both non-Indigenous and Indigenous peoples understanding the truth of what happened to Indigenous peoples, that our children were taken from their homes. Our parents were traumatized from seeing their children being taken away from their homes. We had kids that only spoke Korean and Anishinaabe, and they went to residential schools and came home and they couldn't even communicate with their parents, who were destroyed from having their children taken away. So there's a lot of injustice, right? So, but from an economic standpoint, it's first, how do you support the business community in first acknowledging and understanding the truth? So then we can focus on reconciliation. And reconciliation is about reconciling the relationship between non-Indigenous peoples and Indigenous peoples across this country. And for the most part, the business community and never in I don't, I mean, it's proven through all the initiatives that are happening across the country, but this sense of awareness and acceptance of this history and truth, but people want to take action. They want to get involved, but they want to do it in a good way. And that, sometimes that's scary for non-Indigenous peoples. How do you get involved in reconciliation? How do you do it in a good way? And sometimes that fear of doing it wrong or failing or doing it the wrong way that might be perceived as disrespectful stops business owners from getting involved in reconciliation. So how do we create a space and how do we create opportunities for Indigenous and non-Indigenous business leaders to participate in reconciliation in a good way and give them the confidence that, hey, you know, part of learning is failure, and part of it is a safe space for them to ask those questions, to figure out how we can implement economic reconciliation in our communities. And what we did at the Chamber, and a lot, huge kudos to Jessica Dumas, who's doing some amazing work. She has her own podcast as well. So check out Jessica Dumas on Instagram. She supports a lot of Indigenous women and coaching and leadership training.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, but Jessica helped launch the Truth and Reconciliation Roadmap, and we recently revamped it when I was the chair there, and you can find it on the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce website, so you can look up the Truth and Reconciliation Roadmap. Amazing resource to support businesses with taking the first steps towards reconciliation, and well, I should say truth, and then move towards reconciliation. So it's basically a resource guide to help business owners and business leaders to approach reconciliation, do it in a good way, and connect with the proper resources that can make sure that happens.
And Noah, that's super important, because I felt it too, where you think, I'm walking on eggshells here. Should I say this? Should I ask this question sometime? And when I do, and I'm working with an Indigenous student or Indigenous person, or which is, we chuckle about it too, and we enjoy each other's company. We build trust and relationship, and it breaks down some of the wall. But originally, I think you're right. Like, you walk on eggshells at the beginning because you're not quite sure if you're misappropriating something or if you're saying the wrong thing, if it's collect. So when you break down those barriers, you begin to build some of that trust bit by bit, and you take down some of the wall. That's powerful stuff. Yeah. I'm so glad you're a part of that, because you sound like just the right leader to do it. I know Jessica very well. She's incredible.
Yeah.
We're going to go on to a little space here. It's called Quick Cues.
Okay.
And Zach's going to explain to you what he's going to inflict on you.
he makes it sound a lot worse than it is. It's just, we're going to ask you a quick series of this or that questions, just quick answer. You don't need to justify any of them. Yeah. There's no right or wrong. So it's simple enough for you. You ready?
Fire off.
All right, so cultural preservation or cultural evolution?
Holy.
You got to go quick on these.
Cultural preservation. Cultural preservation.
Okay, books or podcasts for learning?
Books.
All right, long-term legacy or immediate community needs?
Immediate community needs.
Okay. Change from within the system or build something entirely new?
Build something new. I'm an entrepreneur.
Invest in indigenous tech or invest in indigenous agriculture?
Indigenous agriculture.
All right. Got more easier ones. Now, texting or calling?
Calling.
Music or podcasts?
Music.
Success or happiness?
Happiness.
Change the past or see the future?
See the future.
Fame or impact?
Impact.
Backpacking or luxury vacation?
Backpack. I like to be idealistic.
Live in a boat or live in a van?
I think van's more nostalgic to me, I think.
Sports game or concert?
Sports game.
Speak all languages or speak to animals?
Speak all languages.
And what's the best podcast?
This one.
With that final answer, Noah, we can actually upload this to something we call the internet. So thanks for doing that. Wow. That I usually say our quick cues are pretty lame because they generally are. I've never heard quick cue questions like that. Your brain was on fire trying to come. Yeah. My gosh, each one of those is an hour-long podcast.
Yeah. Literally. I was like, holy.
Wow.
I'm
impressed.
That was good.
I was impressed. Hey, Noah, I can't tell you how thankful I am for you being here and for you coming into our space to talk to us, and our two co-hosts. Thank you for being here. Noah, your story is amazing. It's inspirational. And it's one that is about iteration and thinking and finding and discovering and gravitating to things and finding the truth. You're the person looking for the truth, mm-hmm. and you're trying to help us connect to that truth. I think there's nothing more important a person can do. And I always talk about, I have a program here called Connect Your Dots, where I'm asking each one of the students in this space, what is your truth? Mm. And you're on that path. Like you are, now you become the symbol of it for me. So congratulations on your work. Congratulations on embracing what you said was the anger. But for me, it's more like frustration from when it's like looking for the truth. Mm-hmm. And that there's nothing more powerful I think a person can do. So thanks for being that inspiration. Thanks for being our guest host. And any last quick advice to a grade 11 kid that you're sitting in front of and they're trying to figure out what to do, what would you tell them?
I would say for sure be in the moment. Like life, like really when you hear older people say life passed by so fast, it does. Like I just had my 10-year reunion or like my 10 years since high school and I was just like, holy smokes, be in the moment. Like high school is amazing. It's where you can like fail and like you have like, you know, a relative safety net behind you. Like you, be in the moment, enjoy the people you're with. It goes by so fast. If I could go back to high school and like just live those days and just tell myself like just enjoy every single day you're in high school, the people you're around, and you're going to be able to figure it out. Don't worry about it too much. Just focus on, you know, I always say like life is like a mountain. If you just focus on the summit all the time, it's going to feel impossible. Just focus on the next two steps ahead of you and you're going to get to that summit someday. Be in the moment. Like I can't tell you how fast life goes and how lucky you are all to be in like such great programs like you're in right now. I would say just enjoy the moment. It's going to go so fast. Like I'm going to be talking to you and you someday soon. And I'm going to say, you know, remember when I told you life goes fast? And you're going to say, oh my gosh, yes. So, be in the moment. Don't worry too much about like figuring all the things out. In fact, even when you get to university or after university or just going through your career, you're not going to figure it out. You always feel like, you know, you got to do X, Y, and Z. Be in the moment, enjoy the people around you. And it's really like what's success if you can't share it with other people? So always remember that it's people that really bring you happiness and really nurture those relationships. And a lot of the time, I remember being in high school thinking I just had to be the coolest dude ever. It's like, it's cool to be yourself. And that's really what's cool when you grow up is like be unabashedly yourself. And don't try to be what you think is cool out there because it's always changing. And just be yourself because that's really what your unique self is, what's going to lead to your success. And you'll figure it out going from there. So,
well, I love that. And that, again, that's more inspiration about who you are and just let the truth find you. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You don't have to chase it. It's like a butterfly. Just don't chase it. It'll land on your shoulder one day and it'll be there, and you'll be feeling a certain satisfaction and affirmation about that path and that journey. I think Prince said very quickly, Prince, when he had Purple Rain, you know who Prince is, you guys? Come on, Prince, well, come on. Purple Rain was a big song. Do you remember Purple Rain? I don't know, you wouldn't. Amazing guitarist, but it had some big hits, Purple Rain. I remember a reporter or something asking him, so what's going to come after Purple Rain? How important, or something like that? And he said, I don't worry about that, because it's lonely when you get to that top of the summit. Mm. I'm more about just making the music. And it was about enjoy, right? It's lonely at the top of that summit with a number one hit. Mm-hmm. And it's a lonely thing. Everybody's asking you all the wrong questions. And suddenly, it's about climbing the mountain to get to that space that makes all the difference in my life. He said something like that. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on it, but something like that, because I used to love Prince. Anyway, I still do. Thanks for doing this. And I can tell you, Noah, what inspiration. Thank you, Oma. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, our 7 or 8 listeners out there who continually give us that affirmation that we're on the right track. So remember, you can catch this on social media. We have pithy statements that we throw out there, pithy but enthralling statements about the podcast and the episodes. And you catch us on all those cool podcast platforms like Apple and Spotify and others. So that's it for another edition of Adventures in Careerland.